We are into the 8 o'clock hour. Usually Mark Vandermeer is in, but this week Mark is off. He's on vacation. So our good friend John Harris, the Texan sideline reporter and all-around connoisseur, is with us, brought to you by Mattress Firm. John, I want to begin with you with the organization, with everything that's gone on. We're now 3 weeks from the firing of Brian Gain. What a weird month of June it's been.
It's only been 3 weeks?
It's been 3 weeks.
No.
21 days.
Dude, it's been like 4 months. what the hell are you talking about? It feels like 4 months.
It's a crazy time. 21 days.
Well, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, look, it's Friday in June.
Yes.
And there's nothing going on.
I mean, nothing.
Nothing's going on. And so I record the show, and I mean, I'm one of the last people out of the building on a Friday at 3 o'clock or so. And so I'm driving home, and I get a call. You might want to come back and redo your whole show. And I'm like, that's when it got whoa. And so Amy wouldn't tell me exactly what it was. And so I'm like, whole show, man, what changes the whole show? And of course, we find out. So things kind of die down during the week, but I had already planned the following Friday to go to LA with my daughter. She was taking a high school equivalency test. I've told this. She was taking a test that if she passes it, it kind of helps her with her acting. It might open up some gigs for her. And so we went out to LA, and then we were going to do a couple days of sightseeing out in LA. So I get on a flight here about 3:30.
Yep.
Put it on airplane mode. We land in LA. And I'm just like, oh, look at LA. Oh. I got to turn my phone back on.
John, we've lost Nick Caserio.
I'm like,
all is lost.
I mean, my phone just is blowing up. Like, what's going on as I'm landing? And then I'm like, oh, man, poor Mark. He's got to handle all this, and I'm in LA. And there wasn't a whole lot that we could really add to it, to be honest. At that point, it's like, here's the situation. Here's what's going on. And okay, go ahead. And so Jonesy and I were just kind of talking about that too. I mean, I think Mark and I are kind of in the, because we're with the Texans, we look at it and think, people look at us and say, well, you guys know a whole lot more. You're holding back. Not really. We really, I'd love to say that we were holding back. I'd love to be able to know exactly what was going on, but we really don't. And I've listened to you guys, and listened to everybody on the station, and I think everybody has, some pretty interesting thoughts about how this is going to happen or not going to happen, at least for a year. We don't know, and the next time we'll hear from anybody will be players and probably Bill, the 24th, the day they report. I think that's the 24th. Next time we'll hear from it.
I wonder, too, because we'll hear from him, obviously, a bunch during training camp. He talks to the press every day after every practice for the most part. And I would imagine on the first day he's going to lay out at least some kind of, what the framework is, right? This is what I worry about more than anything, because we've talked a lot about maybe the boring stuff of, how do transactions get made and everything.
Yeah.
The thing I worry about and I wonder about is, okay, does Bill O'Brien feel comfortable and confident at this point, given how things are kind of in flux with the GM, saying, look, this is my team. This is our direction. This is what we're going to do. And really, the only people that it really matters for are the players.
Yeah.
And the players don't hear from the GM a lot on a normal day-to-day basis anyway. But I guess I just, when we saw O'Brien during the mini camp, either it was because everything was in flux or whatever, I didn't necessarily feel like, oh, yeah, this is Bill O'Brien's team. So, that's what I, just as a fan, and maybe, putting myself in the position of players, I hope when they come back that over the course of 6 weeks, they've nailed it down to where Bill O'Brien can say, hey, this is my team.
I feel like, and this goes back, and I've heard John say this, and the one thing I feel pretty confident about, at least the last couple of years, last 18 months or whatever with Brian Gain, that the decisions that were made on players were organizational decisions. They were not Brian going off and, I'm going to pick this guy. I'm the only one in the building that likes this guy. I'm going with this guy. And I believe it was that way with Charlie and Dom. I felt it was that way with Rick and Gary. I felt it was that way with Rick and OB to a point. And I felt like with OB and Gain, it was that way. I don't know that it was, I like this guy. I'm going to get him. And so I do feel like this is a team that Bill O'Brien has wanted. And these are players that he wanted to have here. I do think what's interesting to me is I was watching OTAs. The one thing it felt like was that Bill was a little bit more in an advisory role. Like, it felt like he was stepping back and observing more.
Okay.
That,
like, letting Tim Kelly.
Yeah, letting Tim Kelly do some things, and then maybe one day Tim would do some things, and then one day Bill would do some things. But it just felt like he was a little bit more of an observatory role, which I was fine with. I mean, you get to a point where, you know, if you're going to take on as much seemingly as maybe he's going to have to take on now, then, yeah, you have to do that. You have to step back and you have to look at that. Because I think what happens is when, even when you're just calling plays, you're not the offensive coordinator, but you're just calling plays. And as he said in the last few years, you know, Tim would run some meetings and, you know, maybe some of the other guys would run meetings, but he's still responsible for calling the plays. You're still deep in the details of things that maybe you need to take a little bit more of a 30,000-foot, 50,000-foot view of things. And that felt like what he was doing during OTAs. And so I think because we're so used to seeing Bill diving into the details of everything and being so involved with the offense, maybe it looks a little different. I feel like it looked a little different from that perspective. But I think that's something that he wanted to do was just observe a little bit more, especially with some of the young guys he had on both sides of the ball.
That was one of the interesting things he said when he was talking about Carl Smith, I believe, the new quarterback's coach, was that the vast majority of meetings that Deshaun Watson had during this 9-week period was with Carl Smith and Tim Kelly. That right. It sounds like Bill O'Brien wasn't working with Deshaun on a day-in, day-out basis, and it's going to be Tim Kelly and Carl Smith. I like that. And
Mike, I like
one
that too.
One of the things I said early on was like one of the things we'll learn from this experiment is that I think that the parts that have impressed me the most about Bill O'Brien since he's been here have really been more on the head coach side of things than on the offensive coordinator side of things. And there's different reasons for that. But I think that O'Brien has that kind of overall touch on a football team and feel for a football team that maybe this will force him to really be more of like a complete head football coach. And I'm actually intrigued by that to watch that.
No, I absolutely could see that. And I would look forward to that. And I remember we talked to him after he made the decision to move away from offensive coordinator and George Godsey. And I remember him saying, oh, look, there are some things that George did that were a little bit better. There are some things that I look at that I probably do a little bit better. And I thought he had a pretty good handle on it from that perspective. And I think he just felt like, hey, look, it's time. There's evolution. Tim Kelly has made these strides. He's a guy that I trust. And I think that's the one thing about this business that is very tricky. And I had this conversation, you know, with a lot of coaches, but Bill included. And his experience, if you think about it, when he became head coach, he was probably thrown into one of the craziest situations ever. And the question of who do you trust? Who do you trust? He goes to Penn State. You walk into that situation, and half the city is still angry that Joe Paterno is not the head coach, that Joe Paterno got railroaded. And then the other half is like, hey, we want to cleanse ourselves from everything that went on. And you've got these two factions just, you know, bumping heads. And at that point, who do you trust? Mm-hmm. And obviously his NFL pedigree was with a guy with Bill Belichick, who at that point, who did Belichick trust? So I think in some way, shape, or form, Bill still looks on a daily basis for the people that, hey, who can I trust? And having been a coach many, many years ago in a different realm, I kind of fell into the same realm. Like, who do I trust on a daily basis? And then when you find those people, then you rely on them. I think with a guy like Tim Kelly, he felt like, look, I trust this guy inherently. Not that he's going to be just a yes man, but I trust that he's going to do everything possible to make us look good, to make me look good, to make the team look good. And I think that for him has taken a while. Who do I trust? And then put those people around me. And I feel like he's really started to put that group of people around him that he really trusts.
I like this image of Bill O'Brien going into Happy Valley like it was Kandahar. Like who the hell do I trust in here? Like this this faction's been on that side and then that side over there.
Yeah.
When it comes to the GM thing, what I'm worried about, John, is I think there has to be somebody who is important in any building, whether it's a football team in this case, a baseball team, or a basketball team, who can take a look at what's happening and make more of the global decisions. Like with the Rockets, okay, you know, how do we chase the Warriors? How do we win the title? That's obviously, you know, Daryl Morey's job.
Yep.
The Astros have been struggling recently. Jeff Luhnow makes the call on what starting pitcher to add. Since the coach or the manager's in the trenches every single day, I worry about, like, let's say Trent Williams actually is available. Who makes the decision of like, hey, organizationally, we're in a spot where making this trade actually makes sense? How does that decision get made now?
Well, adding to that decision, I think one of the things when you coach these players, I think the one thing that gets really, really difficult is you see a player that you know has given you everything every single day. You've asked them, hey, in the offseason, I need you to do this. I need you to add weight. I need you to get faster. I need you to work on these things. And then comes back for training camp, and you can see those things. You can see he's put in the work. You see he's put in the time. He's listening to what you say. He gets there early. Like, you get an emotional attachment to a particular player. So sometimes it gets a little bit more difficult to step back away and say, okay, is this the right thing for the ball club? I love this guy, and I don't want him to go, or I really feel like he can get better with more reps. And so that I think is the hard part. So the one thing that Bill Belichick, and look, Belichick gets brought up. I think Pete Carroll does this too. But Pete Carroll, when he first got out to Seattle, he and John Schneider made, I think, 210 transactions the first year.
Yeah, it was just a revolving door. It was
nuts. The bottom, like, fourth of the roster just churned and churned. And I think the one thing that Belichick in particular, I mean, Carroll I can see because he does the way he is with his players, but that emotional attachment to them. And I think Belichick just has a way of drawing a line of, I'm asking you to do these things for the team, but there's this emotional detachment that I have so that I can make a transaction that's good for the ball club. And that, if it is going to be that way, if it is going to be kind of a Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick sort of setup, then that's going to be the challenge for Bill to be able to do that, to step back and take that global view. Is it easier for somebody else that's not in that room every single day as the head coach, as the guy that the players have to look to as the leader to do that? Probably so. I don't think there's any question it's easier for somebody to see that. If that's going to be the case and that's the way they're going to set it up, then whoever is going to be the John Schneider to the Pete Carroll or the Nick Caserio to the Bill Belichick, whoever that guy is going to be, is going to have to be strong enough in his beliefs to say, look, we're not good enough at this position, or, hey, we need to be able to make this move. And I think that person also has to be able to think out of the box a little bit.
Yes.
And I'm not saying you've got to be this just, well, you know, go on ESPN trade machine and come up with this trade that ends up with LeBron, but you give up 9 players. I'm not talking about that. But you have to be able to, who could potentially be available? And not to say that that wasn't being done. I think that was being done. And I think that those things are going on. I think the personnel people that do the evals, Rob Kissel and Matt Bazergan and James Lipford, who's the director of college scouting, those guys are excellent, man. I've talked to each one of them on football, non-football. I mean, they're excellent guys. So I think those things are going on. I think they're happening. So it's just a matter of, are you gonna pull the trigger on some things?
You know what Brian Gain needed? He needed a little bit of the old school, like a Bear Bryant whiskey sipping. It's just like if Gain had just sipped a little bit of whiskey in the late afternoon, he might have gotten a little looser with the phone calls. Like, hey, look, see, this is what I'm thinking about. What do you say you part ways with this Trent Williams fella here? Bit. We got a great medical staff here. He'll love him.
Well, and again, we go back to, there were two people through the history of this organization that are going to be able to make a unilateral, just singular decision. And one passed away in November, unfortunately, and the other is his son, Cal McNair, who's now in charge. Those are the two that will, and if those guys say, hey, go out and get Trent Williams and do it now.
Right.
I mean, how do you think we ended up with Brock Osweiler?
Yeah. Then you get them.
If yeah, not, then you don't get them. So I think from that perspective, and not to say that one's more patient or less or impatient, whatever the case might be, I just think you're right, Mike. You're absolutely right. You have to have that view from the football team.
You need that.
You need that. And sometimes for an NFL team, it comes from the owner. I mean, Jimmy Haslam did it in Cleveland for a long time, and now he stepped away because he can let John Dorsey do it. So there are just different ways that you can do this, and we'll see how this works with this version of the Houston Texans going forward.